Chapter 4. Lessons from Losers. Experience is the hardest kind of teacher. It gives you the test first and the lesson afterward. Oscar Wilde. Now I will turn to another useful area of study to help us in our efforts to rule ourselves. As we know, we learn more from our failures than from our successes, so we will turn to those who have much experience in deadly lessons. Let's see what military incompetence can teach us. Before I went to Sandhurst, I had read a brilliant book on the psychology of military incompetence by a former Army bomb disposal officer, Major Norman F. Dixon. By chance, the one-armed major gave us a lecture when I was at Sandhurst, joking that his missing arm was an obvious qualification for him to talk about the subject. The lessons he drew upon were from the military, but his four conclusions could have come from any field. However, the consequences of incompetence in war are, naturally enough, more dramatic, starker, and more memorable than those from a failing laundry business or an ailing insurance sales outfit. Operations in these don't tend to end in catastrophes or death and mayhem for many thousands. A marketing campaign that is an utter failure may just end with red ink on the balance sheet. However, the lessons learned in war are useful and applicable in many fields, particularly in helping us understand how to safeguard our democratic rights and to increase our freedoms. The first and most important point he made concerned overestimating one's own abilities. I also see arrogance as the most dangerous of mindsets, as it can lead to dismal consequences. No doubt I got this idea to some extent from the Major's lessons, but also from my own experience. When young and full of piss and vinegar, I thought very highly of myself and only learned to alter this opinion after many errors and embarrassments. But the point is well made by Dixon and is obviously relevant to our political crisis. The democracies have been hollowed out by special interests, and this becomes more apparent by the day as the unelected try to order the voters about. Our growing awareness of the reality of the system and its failings, for us but not for them of course, has not only been revealed by access to more information courtesy of the internet, but from our individual knowledge of the past and from what we register with our own eyes and ears. George Orwell's 1984 vision of history undergoing a great reset in some bureaucrat's dingy office is underway, with works like What You Have in Your Hand facing suppression by gutless time servers who aren't fit to polish a 19-year-old combat infantryman's boots. Dissatisfaction is rampant because inflation is rampant. Disillusion is growing because jobs are disappearing. Yet politicians still have their heads up their own backsides, or up those of the powerful. Why is this the case? After many decades in operation, our fully representative democracy has settled into an ever-expanding comfort zone of general cronyism, with parties and incumbent politicians knowing how to work the system to their advantage, with little threat of exposure and punishment. In most seats, they don't have to take much notice of voters, so many don't, and the options for the voters are also reducing as party policies often align. With MPs selected by the party, not the members or voters, overconfidence leads them to believe that the electorate won't do anything about the backroom deals and favours. Some may have entered the game with great enthusiasm, dying to do good, but as they settle in and start to see how corrupted the system is, they have to choose, stay or go. The vast majority stay, many choosing the whip's favours over the duty to honestly represent their constituents, then stand back and see how the doors open. Future greatness, directorships, foreign trips, and networking like you wouldn't believe. This has worked forever. All they have to do is keep the voters out. None of that Swiss hybrid rubbish here, thank you. And under the thumb, as ever, add a little acting at election time, and lie by omission the rest of the time, and all will be well. Yes, many can do that. No wonder they are overconfident, and that's when we strike. This is rule no one in the incompetence game. The out of touch make for easier pickings, but we need to strike unremittingly because they are holding their ground. and we are attacking. We must overwhelm them with numbers, with votes that they cannot stem the flow of. And our next lesson from the military incompetence? Don't underestimate the opposition. As mentioned previously, the wonderfully armed West lost to the rudimentarily equipped Taliban. Why? Swaggering generals and their gophers had attended staff colleges and had their PhDs in international relations, but how many really understood the motivation of those they tried to defeat? How many confronted the corruption in the local government, the military, and the law enforcement establishments? There you go, not many. So the Taliban's great capacity to carry on the fight was not solely down to their religious motivation, but also because they could legitimately claim that the government was corrupt, so their NATO backers could be considered so too. Had the Americans learnt anything after they lost to the communists in Vietnam, where they had propped up a similarly rancid regime? Did they ever consider that they could lose against the sandal-wearing Taliban as they had against the used-tire, bee-sandaled Viet Cong guerrillas? Maybe they did learn and didn't lose. They just weren't fighting to win, but to prosper. Maybe the investors in the companies involved made a lot of money out of the wars, all for the loss of a few soldiers sacrificed on the dollar altar, sent over to supposedly protect and empower the women judges that were promoted for a few years, but who now languish where? Maybe the same is happening in the Ukraine. The machine hardly missed a beat. A too rapid and disastrous evacuation from an ill-chosen airport, followed by seamless delivery of munitions to kick off Europe's worst war for many decades. It's a pity that they left $80-odd billion worth of taxpayer-funded kit behind, but that's not their money, though I bet it was spread across profit statements somewhere and invested in some nice New York and Dubai apartments. Today, we really do have rotten regimes at home, combos of publicly funded super bureaucracies and central banking organs of the private financial empires. Whatever you do, don't underestimate the opposition and who they may send after you. Maybe they will appear as a couple of officers from the local police checking your thinking, wanting to see what you are reading or what building you are praying near to. Or worse, they may just send a man in a suit with access to assets and funds you don't want to know about. Who knows what forces out there will not accept the people demanding the veto. Nevertheless, we all must let them know that we will have it, and those now hiding behind the curtain can reveal themselves and hope for leniency, or they can slink off stage left and hope to remain as anonymous in the future as they are now. They must make their calculations and take their chances too. Ignoring facts is the third major fault that has been common when the military has messed up. Something that doesn't jive with your preconceptions is more easily discounted than something that does match them. You will naturally latch onto the latter and ignore probably the former. This is common in many fields, not just the military. In defense of the army, we were trained to think through problems as logically as possible, taking in all the relevant material that we could when coming to decisions. This formal process was known as the military appreciation in the UK and the military estimate in the US. This idea no doubt reflects the lessons learned that Major Dixon had noted in his book, but it is impossible to be truly objective or to have perfect and full knowledge of any problem, because, as covered above, we are not as logical or as reasonable as we like to believe. However, to guard against this natural inclination to favor one course of action, even before making our analysis, the Army had a simple reminder telling us to stop situating the appreciation. Reality can always bite, but much harder when you forget this rule. Sigh, 2018. Interestingly, I once purchased a Harvard University press book detailing the process for developing a business case. It was almost a complete crib of the military estimate process. This is just another demonstration that there has been considerable spillover from the military into the corporate complex mission statements and standard operating procedures now abound in the private sector, as much as they do in the military world from which they sprang. Something else worth noting, the MBA was created at Harvard, and who do you think it was for? Business bureaucrats, not real bosses. Why is it called a Master of Business Administration and not something more aggressive, such as a Master of Business Growth or a Master of Business Leadership? Might it be because the Boston Brahmin caste was only really looking for appropriately educated cogs to turn the wheels of their well-oiled business machines, not competitors to their monopolies? More on this later. As an intelligence analyst, I am used to working with incomplete data and conflicting assessments, but in the military field, life and death decisions may have to be made right now, even with these shortcomings. However, the point Nixon was really making was about willful ignorance, deliberately discounting information that does not support your case for the simple reason that it does not support your case. Maybe the medical companies, their scientists and doctors did this when recommending all those injections, or encouraged transitioning in children until the famous or infamous in better circles Tavistock Clinic in the UK was forced to close. What do you think? Pay attention, study the reports, think hard, and work through the night if you must. And always keep this important point in mind. Data is there to be dispassionately considered, not ignored. At last, we come to the final lesson from the Soldier's School of Hard Knocks, that one where we suffer inordinate losses by ignoring the three bruising encounters noted above, and we still don't learn. We repeat mistakes over and over. I watched a video about a sniper in the Ukraine who said that he shot a soldier in a particular sector of a defensive line, and for the rest of the day, someone kept sending replacements into the same exposed spot. So he shot them all, one after another. This is a sickening waste of human life and a sad reflection on human frailty and poor decision-making. If you do identify a pattern, try to do so quickly and learn from it so that you can improve things. In the case above, stop killing your own. In the case of the subject area of this book, stop expecting the political parties and the system they benefit from to rush out and favor the voters' veto more than they do their own careers. With one exposure after another of the aims, the failings, and the mendacity of the elites, people need to learn to demand something different, not accept more of the same. Most importantly, learn that the system is the problem. I think that you will agree that Elon Musk is no fool, and he is a big fan of direct democracy. He recognizes that the representative system is inherently corrupt, with the direct version being less so, as in a direct or hybrid system, ensuring that we can directly and quickly hold our public servants to account. RAT 2019. The hybrid solution retains parties and representatives to carry out the daily drudge involved in administering our wishes, but it brings in the tools of direct democracy to keep the representatives on their toes. Over time, we will see a different type of politician coming forward. Out will go the overambitious, narcissist-psycho combos, and in their place will come more community-minded people looking to do their bit. That's the lesson from the part-time representatives in Switzerland, and the lesson we already should have learned from the past behavior of our lot in the political class. Yes, part-time. Why does Scotland, with 5 million people, need full-timers when the 8 million Swiss only need their representatives to work 4 3-week sessions a year? Our clowns don't want to embrace change that puts us in charge. Who benefits more from our current system, us or them? Those turkeys ain't voting for Christmas, so let's vote to give them a good plucking. I hope that the above has given clear directions on how to select and maintain your focus on winning the battle for democracy. For centuries, we have allowed garbage into the legislature, so we have had garbage coming out, and that is because we have had no immediate means to nod our approval of good laws or to toss out rubbish ones. The hybrid solution is the way to incentivize representatives to up their game and to keep them on the straight and narrow. It is the next step for us to take to protect and build upon the freedoms hard-earned for us by previous generations. The tough lessons detailed in this chapter should keep us on the path to success, avoiding pitfalls whilst ensuring progress. Next up, I will be covering more tactical level tools to help you in your plans to retain and add to your family's freedoms. Keep on plucking.